Y'all, I don't know if you realize this. I often bend over backwards trying to figure out a way to respectfully convey my criticism. But I'm not going to take the time to do that today because this is one of the dumbest brain dead takes I've ever seen in my life.
This is a new show.
Sup, you beautiful bastards. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show, your daily dive into the news. Hope you had a fantastic Monday evening, Tuesday morning. We've got a lot of interesting and important news to talk about today, but first, I'm very excited to announce the brand new mini drop over at beautifulbastard.com just went live, including the brand new I Don't Know Where I'm Going, But I Know It'll Be an Adventure shirts and hoodies. The only constant is change gear. The newest evolution of the Yeah, No, I'm Fine tee and crew. And he demanded it, and so I'm giving it to you. The unvaulting of the Go Easy on Yourself tea, crew, and the introduction of the tank. All available first come, first served over at beautifulbastard.com along with our other classic bestsellers. So jump in on that. Treat yourself. Also, thank you for supporting the show, but we got a lot of news to talk about today, so let's just jump into it.
Starting with,
so there's this huge controversy that just broke out. There's also now backlash, and it's all centered around the future of AI, the Humane AI Pen, and Marques Brownlee, aka MKBHD. And while this is a huge situation in the world of tech, even if you don't care about tech, this goes past that. Right, so let me explain. The Humane AI Pen, it's supposed to be this wearable device that sends messages and makes calls, and the company says that the pen acts as your assistant and second brain. Right, seemingly a swing at something meant to replace an iPhone, or at the very least work in conjunction where you're not looking at your device all the time. But that's me oversimplifying it. Getting into some specifics, right, the pen doesn't have a screen. Instead of a display, it projects imagery onto your palm and it handles tasks and searches via your voice. It can also translate languages, identify objects and provide information about them, take photos, and more. But the early reviews of the product they just released are not very flattering, with places like Bloomberg putting out a review called "The AI Device Revolution Isn't Going to Kill the Smartphone," with a review noting that the device is just so slow answering questions. It also can't do basic things like set a timer or access a calendar or third-party apps. We've also seen plenty of criticisms about bad battery life. You also had some saying it looks creepy to have a little camera-equipped device on your shirt when you're out in public. And Bloomberg adding, the company acknowledges that the device is a version 1.0, but it feels even earlier than that. Meanwhile, you had The Verge, for example, noting there were some tools that it had that were useful. Like it could recognize a restaurant and tell you if it has good reviews, and it's also nice to be able to do a simple task without needing to get your phone out and then getting accidentally sucked into TikTok. But The Verge also noting that it was super inconsistent and failed to do a lot of simple tasks like make calls. And adding, the one and only thing I can truly rely on the AI pen to do is tell me the time. Should you buy this thing? That one's easy. Nope, nuh-uh. I can't think of anyone to whom I'd recommend spending the $699 for the device and the $24 monthly subscription. And then all of that bringing us to Marques Brownlee, who put out a video of his own agreeing with many of those points and saying it is the worst product he ever reviewed. Though notably, he did give credit where it was due, saying he found the hardware to be impressive and the way that you use your hand to control the projections, that it's fairly intuitive, all things considered. But notably, he also said that it just has a lot of problems, even with just asking it questions.
It's often wrong, because AI still can hallucinate and there are still issues with it just not understanding correctly or just saying the wrong thing.
MKBHD also noting that it gets overheated, that it's often warm, and it's just hard to forget that you have a warm square on your chest. Also saying that it lacks apps, right? You can't call an Uber or order something on Amazon, though when it comes to shopping, he would hesitate to even try because it would just be easier to do on a phone.
I've seen a lot of demos where someone's like, plan me a trip to Europe, plan me an expedition. I don't even want to buy detergent online on this because I need to check all the ratings and the titles and make sure I'm ordering the right one. I do not trust that with just my voice.
And even though you have outlets like the Washington Post saying this product is not trying to be an iPhone killer, you have some arguing that it's pretty clear Humane might be hoping for that, right? Because that potential goal actually creates one of the pen's biggest flaws. It does not connect to your phone at all. It gives you a different number and it exists totally separate, which is also why you had Marques calling this a victim of its future ambition.
In order to get it to that future, they can't set the precedent now of connecting it to your phone, because then that means they have to remove that feature in the future, and they don't want to do that. So this device, as it exists today, is hamstrung by its ideal future version of itself.
And so interestingly with all this, even though there were so many bad reviews today, MKBHD, likely because he is one of the biggest creators in the world, became the poster child for not liking this device. With some even using this situation as a way to try to frame him as this like careless villain. With one of the most viral reactions coming from Daniel Vassallo, who screenshotted Marques's video and wrote, "I find it distasteful, almost unethical to say this when you have 18 million subscribers. Hard to explain why, but with great reach comes great responsibility." Potentially killing someone else's nascent project reeks of carelessness. First, do no harm. Y'all, I don't know if you realize this. I often bend over backwards trying to figure out a way to respectfully convey my criticism. But I'm not going to take the time to do that today because this is one of the dumbest brain-dead takes I've ever seen in my life. We got Daniel out here for some reason almost quoting Uncle Ben and the Hippocratic Oath. Do no harm. Like he's a doctor? He's a tech reviewer and arguably saving people from spending $700 plus a monthly fee on something that arguably sucks, saving them the time and the frustration and the hassle of even if they can return it. Like that could be seen as a social good. And Marquez, for those that are unfamiliar, if you watch through his stuff, you can see he's not one of these people that loves to shit on products. But you know, when it comes to review channels or critics, whether it be in tech or movies or TV shows, games, whatever, you have a lot of those people who love to tear things down. That's not MKBHD, which is also why his negative reviews stand out so much. And you don't even have to just take his past videos as a way to go like, okay, where's this guy at? In the actual video that Marquez put out that you're so offended by, he goes out of his way to split the review into two parts. What it is, what it's supposed to do, its capabilities, like, hey, tell me what's in front of me, and it's pointing out cameras and the carpet and that thing. And then separately, his own real-world experiences with it. And as people like Trung Fan have pointed out, like, that is to humane AI's benefit. So when I see Lex Luthor from Wish just going like, I can't believe MKBHD would. Do no harm, Marquez. Like my man Omni rightly pointed out, Marquez's only responsibility is to himself and, more importantly, his audience. That is who at all times he should be going out of his way to make sure he does not harm. That is the unspoken social contract that exists. It is not his job to run interference or PR for a company that publicly released a product at $700 with a monthly fee because version one of their product is lackluster. Future versions may be great, maybe it's sped up, maybe things get more accurate. But this review is about the here and now of what people can purchase and what they'll get. Now that said, I equally don't understand the people that like just love the fact that they get to shit on this product. To me, that's somewhat weirdo behavior because it's a lot of work and it's so hard to try to release something thing that's actually new. So I understand why some people may be sensitive to criticisms because a lot of those end up getting kind of like bulked in with the people that just, it's pure hate. But those things are not one and the same. But I guess kind of what I'm saying here is don't be stupid, stupid. And then this news out of Australia is horrible because on Saturday there was a bloody rampage at the Bondi Junction shopping mall in Sydney with this 40-year-old man running around with a large knife stabbing 18 people, killing at least 6 of them. With people seeing video of him chasing horrified shoppers taken from an upper level. Shopkeepers giving shelter to bystanders, locking their doors. Some people trying to block off the attacker, others coming to the aid of victims, risking their own lives in the process. With that, including this lifeguard who described the scene to 9 News.
And this lady, there was just so much blood. I've never seen that much blood. And she had blood everywhere. And me and 2 other members of the public and a few police, we were just looking for wounds and we were just sort of trying to stem the bleeding as we could. And as I looked up, I looked down and there was just multiple victims sort of like 50 meters apart.
And included among those injured was a 38-year-old mom who was stabbed while trying to shield her 9-month-old baby from the attacker. But despite her best efforts, he still wounded the infant girl, with reports describing how the mom, who was bleeding out, desperately clambered into a nearby store and handed her baby off to a group of bystanders. And then, as another witness recalled to Sky News, almost everyone who was nearby heard what happened next.
We heard the gunshots. I think, I'm not sure if it was 4 or 5, but we heard gunshots, and that's when everyone just ran. And everyone looked terrified and people were locking themselves in the stores.
But those gunshots coming from the barrel of a female police officer's firearm. Because reportedly this killer lunged at her and she shot him dead, bringing this carnage to an end. Though sadly, the suffering didn't stop because more heartbreaking news broke from the hospital where the mother and her baby were rushed.
Her baby went into surgery and her mom didn't make it.
However, fortunately, the baby's condition has reportedly improved. Now, as far as the killer, we're still finding out details about him. Right, reportedly, he was known to Queensland police, though not for anything significant. It's also been reported that he's been struggling with mental illness since he was 17. His father telling reporters that he had recently come off his medication. And initially, that's the explanation police gave for what caused him to do this. With the assistant police commissioner on Sunday shooting down rumors from the far right that the killer was an Islamic terrorist.
As I had said last night, there is still, to this point, nothing that we have. No information we have received, no evidence we have recovered, no intelligence that we have gathered that would suggest that this was driven by any particular motivation, ideology, or otherwise.
But then you also had another police commissioner later telling ABC News that it was obvious the killer targeted women in particular, because reportedly 5 of the 6 people that he killed were women, and the one man being a security guard who tried to stop the killer. And then of the 12 people who were wounded, only 2 were men. And of those 12, as of filming, 4 of them reportedly have been released so far, while 8 continue to receive care in conditions ranging from serious to stable. And you know, that gendered motive, that was also backed up by the killer's father, who told reporters,
because he wanted a girlfriend, and he's got no social skills, and he was frustrated out of his brain.
But the father also apologizing to all the victims and then getting extremely emotional about the whole thing.
I'm extremely sorry. I'm heartbroken for you. Look, this is so horrendous that I can't even explain it. I love my son. I made myself a servant to my son when I found out he had a mental illness. I became his servant. I did everything because I love that boy. I love my son. I'd give my life for him. I love him dearly. And, you know, how do you love a monster? Give birth to him. Okay, he's my son, and I'm loving a monster. To you, he's a monster. To me, he was a very sick boy. Believe me, he was a very sick boy.
So now police are investigating this massacre and building a profile of the killer. But then before the city could even recover from that shock, there was another brutal stabbing just 2 days later, with someone walking up to a bishop right in the middle of a sermon being live streamed online from this church and viciously stabbing him in the neck and head, with immediately several churchgoers rushing to his defense. They were also stabbed themselves, though luckily their injuries were reportedly non-life-threatening. Also notably with this, right after the police got the incident under control, hundreds of people gathered outside the church demanding that the attacker be brought outside, with them seen clashing with the cops, leading to at least a couple more injuries, with people throwing stones, bricks, and bottles, damaging cars, and police deploying tear gas in response. And there, we're now getting reports that a suspect has been arrested, and it turns out to be a 15-year-old boy. But of course, all of this is moving in real time, everything is still developing, and if anything comes from the investigations or anything here, of course, we'll talk about it.
And then?
MI5 failed to prevent that tragic bombing that happened at Ariana Grande's concert in Manchester back in 2017. That, at least, is what survivors of the incident are alleging in this new lawsuit. Right, and for those who don't know, one, MI5 is the UK's counterintelligence and security agency. Two, over 250 victims and family members of the bombing have filed a group claim against it with the Investigatory Powers Tribunal. And three, even though the lawyers representing them didn't give further comment beyond confirming that the complaint was filed, this notably comes a year after an inquiry found that MI5 missed the chance to take investigative action that could have stopped the bombing, with that attack killing 22 people and hundreds more getting injured as they were leaving Ariana Grande's concert at Manchester Arena. Right, and the report found that there were 2 pieces of evidence assessed about the suicide bomber who carried out the attack, and had they been acted on, officers could have surveilled him and found the car that the explosives were stored in. But a report on that information was never written up. And with that, you actually had the Director General of MI5 saying that he regretted that this intelligence was not obtained, and adding, gathering covert intelligence is difficult, but had we managed to seize the slim chance we had, those impacted might not have experienced such appalling loss and trauma. Though the report also noted that even though it was possible that quicker action might have stopped the bombing, it said it was, quote, quite impossible to say definitively if any intervention would have been fully effective. And so all of that bringing us to this lawsuit, which again, there are very few details out so far. But you did have the New York Times reporting that this actually appears to be the first time MI5 has been sued for failing to prevent a terror attack, with it noting that holding security groups accountable, it's incredibly difficult. For example, families of 9/11 victims have tried for a long time, but they haven't had tons of luck. But with that, you also have places like The Guardian noting that the families of those affected feel like they have to at least try, pointing to comments Andrew Roussos made last year, right? He's the father of an 8-year-old girl who died at the concert. And he previously said, it's the only way to learn. Everybody learns by hitting them hard in the pocket. I'm sorry to say. At 2017, we were at the highest alert and everyone was warned of an attack in this country. So if they would have learned lessons, they wouldn't have allowed the attacker to walk into that arena. So yes, MI5 have, for me, most of the blame. But whether that argument has any weight in the legal world or even out there in the court of public opinion, we'll have to wait and see. Though for one of those, we won't have to wait, because I'd love for you to leave comments down below on what your thoughts are here.
And then,
you know, for any of you focused on getting your business off the ground, creating a place to share your homemade goods, or even a personal blog, I got a great solution for you. And it comes from, and I want to thank the fantastic sponsor of today's show, Squarespace. Because, you know, I've been partnering with Squarespace for years now, and I have to say, it is just so easy. There's nothing to install, patch, or update ever. And creating a beautiful website with Squarespace's Fluid Engine is so easy. You just drag things where you like, no coding necessary. And if you need a starting point, Squarespace has a bunch of great professional templates. You can even sell custom merch easily. Squarespace will handle all the production and shipping. Plus, with Squarespace, you get access to all their marketing tools and analytics, and their award-winning customer care team via email or live chat 24/7. So go check it out. See why so many others love it. See why You're going to love it. And start your free trial today over at squarespace.com/Phil. Just make sure you enter an offer code Phil to get 10% off your first purchase and let them know we sent you. And then it's not just you. We have the president of Colombia openly talking about World War III, but not for anything having to do with Colombia itself. Instead, it's about the potential for escalating violence between Israel and Iran to lead to a bigger war. Right? And that connected to Iran over the weekend, launching what many are calling an unprecedented aerial attack on Israel, which according to the IDF included the firing of at least 350 drones, missiles, and rockets launched by Iran and its allied groups in Iraq, Yemen, and Lebanon. Though notably, 99% of those were intercepted by Israel, the U.S., or other partners. With a 7-year-old girl living in an Arab Bedouin community, which notably is not recognized by the Israeli state, being the only reported injury. And so the reason that this is considered an unprecedented attack has nothing to do with it being deadly or damaging. Instead, it's just the fact that it happened the way it did at all. And that's because this is actually the first time Iran has launched an assault against Israel from its own territory. Because, you know, Iran and Israel have been involved in a so-called shadow war for decades, with Iran largely acting through groups like Hamas, as well as Hezbollah and the Houthis. And this is a key part of Israel's strategy being targeted assassinations of Iranian military leaders and nuclear scientists. And ever since the October 7th attacks, and in the midst of Israel's ongoing war in Gaza, things have started to heat up. With the most significant escalation before this weekend being when suspected Israeli warplanes struck a building that was part of an Iranian embassy complex in Syria. With that attack killing several Iranian officials and leading to Iran's supreme leader speaking before a massive crowd, calling the attack a violation of international norms and vowing revenge. So now that Iran has actually followed through on those threats, everyone's freaking out, right? Because there is a fear that this could be the thing that finally plunges the Middle East into a wider regional war. So with that, you had the UN holding an emergency meeting on Sunday, and Secretary General Antonio Guterres saying that the Middle East is, quote, on the brink.
The people of the region are confronting a real danger of a devastating full-scale conflict. Now is the time to defuse and de-escalate. Now is the time for maximum restraint.
Also at that meeting, you had Israel's ambassador to the UN urging the world to stop ignoring Iran's crimes and take action there. And all this as the Iranian ambassador claimed that Iran had only attacked military targets in the occupied Palestinian territories, adding that Iran was committed to de-escalation and avoiding regional conflict, but also saying this.
If the U.S. initiate military operation against Iran, its citizen, or its security and interest, Iran will use its inherent right to respond proportionately.
And so that brings us to, you know, the U.S. response. And to start there, Biden released a statement on Saturday condemning the Iranian assault, also announcing that he'd bring together fellow G7 leaders to coordinate a united diplomatic response to Iran's brazen attack. And that meeting actually took place yesterday, with the emphasis reportedly being on non-military actions that would, quote, limit the prospects of a wider war. But with that, the G7 also releasing a statement reaffirming support for Israel and accusing Iran of, quote, provoking an uncontrollable regional escalation. Which, you know, is a pretty odd choice of words when the whole point of the meeting was ostensibly to control the regional escalation. But anyways, and perhaps more notably, Biden has reportedly said that the U.S. will not participate in any offensive action against Iran. And he's been on the phone with Netanyahu, privately advising the Israeli PM against attacking Iran as well, apparently arguing that Israel successfully demonstrated its military superiority this weekend, making a further response unnecessary. But of course, whether Netanyahu actually takes Biden's advice, that remains an open question. You know, as I'm recording this, Israel's war cabinet is still weighing its options. And though Israel has reportedly told the United States that it is, quote, not looking for a significant escalation with Iran, one Israeli official has also vowed to, quote, build a regional coalition and exact the price from Iran in the fashion and timing that is right for them. And in general, there's a lot of disagreement over what the best way to avoid escalation actually is. For example, Nomi Beriakov, an expert on Middle East politics, told the New York Times that Iran has made it, quote, abundantly clear that they consider the attack over, and that the response should at most be an attack on Iranian assets abroad, but not in the country itself. But speaking with the Associated Press, Bradley Bowman from the Foundation of the Defense of Democracies cautioned against being too soft on Iran. And though he didn't specifically advocate for direct strikes on the country, he did say the U.S. should make Iran, quote, regret this attack.
We all want to avoid a regional war, but the question is, how do you best achieve it? And my point is that if our adversaries are left with the impression that avoiding war is the most important thing for us, then you're simply inviting aggression.
With him going on in that clip to say he's not only talking about sending a message to Iran, but also to U.S. adversaries like Russia and China. And so also with that, there's a new push by lawmakers in the U.S. to reaffirm the country's support for Israel and other allies, with nearly 100 representatives, both Democrats and Republicans, signing a letter in the wake of the Iranian attacks urging Mike Johnson to immediately bring a bill that includes aid for Israel as well as Ukraine and Taiwan before the House floor. Of course, that as aid for Israel has become an increasingly contentious issue in the U.S. And to that point, while we've talked about Iran's aggression and violations of international law, it is of course also the case that Israel still stands accused of genocide and a host of other crimes. And all this is more than 33,000 people have been killed according to the Gaza Health Ministry. And even just today, you had thousands of Palestinians attempting to return home to northern Gaza, allegedly coming under Israeli fire. So, you know, part of the point here being that all of this is incredibly complex in the sense of there are just so many different things happening and so many different levers that could be pulled that then affect all the other things. With that, I'll leave it there for now and ask you, what are your thoughts here? And then let's talk about this controversy around STIs and your privacy, because it's connected to this healthcare app that's out there right now called Calmera, which claims that it can identify up to 10 STIs based on a picture of your genitals. With that, including everything from herpes to syphilis to HPV and others. And Calmera claims that not only can the AI powering the app do this, but that it can actually do it in under 60 seconds and with an accuracy rating of 96%. And this company might just be a sign of where the industry is going as AI companies continue to swear that their algorithms can do more and more and more. However, whether it's Calmera or another company, there are major concerns about efficacy and privacy. But I mean, looking at Calmera again, many experts are shocked that they can claim 96% accuracy based just on a photo. Now, there's a reason that most STI tests use blood samples and direct swabs. It's because the vast majority are asymptomatic. Like in your head, you might think, oh, well, something like herpes is obvious because it shows. But that's really not the case. Most cases never actually have an outbreak. And even when they do, it's for relatively short periods at a time. And it's the same story with something like syphilis. The initial symptoms often include a sore and then it goes away. But unless you're catching these things right when they're happening, there's no real way for the app to know. And it completely misses other far more common STIs like gonorrhea or chlamydia, with both having pretty easy to miss symptoms. And then for the times where it's not easy to miss, it's pretty obvious that you need to get a test. And then in addition to all that, there are privacy concerns. Like, how ethical is it to get a photo of your partner's goods? Right? Obviously, you should never do that without their consent. That is illegal in many places. And you could also run into revenge porn laws if you then send it off to a third party without their consent. Also, with this, I want to take a second to say, like, you should not feel uncomfortable asking someone for an STI test. How you do it, that matters a lot. But making your partner comfortable, like, it should be a kind of nothing. Back to this news, right, there are serious concerns about how Calmera and other AI companies treat this data. But Sarah Geohagen, a lawyer for the Electronic Privacy Information Center, putting it this way, saying, I don't think a solution is taking photos of someone else's genitals and sharing them with an app that's not even a medical provider and isn't subject to the same standards a doctor's office would be. Because yeah, unlike a doctor and other actual healthcare workers, Calmera claims that it isn't beholden to laws like HIPAA, but claiming that its data can't be used to identify a single person. Although I don't know how much that makes would-be patients feel better. And that's in addition to there being serious doubts that Calmera wouldn't need to follow HIPAA. They have no way to stop someone sending a photo that includes a patient's face, which would likely be enough to fall under HIPAA. Not to mention that the company likely needs to navigate a ton of other data privacy laws, even if the data is anonymized. And they likely even fail at that. Right? One thing that's normally done to protect users is that companies won't save data that's sent to them. But according to one of the company's co-founders, my workers' computers are filled with penis pictures, which I... On top of that, there are real concerns that Calmera and HeHealth, another app made by the same company, are vastly overpromising about their app's capabilities. Right, and I don't just mean because of the asymptomatic nature of these diseases like we talked about, but also because of the data that it was trained on. Right, in a preprint from March, they claim that the AI from both apps was trained on original images of 5 diseases. And those images coming from patients in India, Sri Lanka, Singapore, Australia, the UK, and the US. And so that number might have stood out to you. They said 5 diseases. But the company claims they can identify 10. So people have the question of, well, how can they identify 10? And adding to the doubts are the fact that many of these images are synthetic, meaning that they used other AI imaging models to make up photos of diseased patients. But to be fair, this is more of a gray zone when it comes to training AI. On the one hand, it's not real data, so there are fears that it could skew how models are trained. But on the other hand, proponents say that using realistic synthetic data can help fill in gaps in data sets where it can be hard to get that data and not run into privacy issues. And notably with all this, you have the company behind the apps claiming that their capabilities have been vetted by 30,000 users. Although again, that doesn't really solve the other problems with the company. But Carrie Lenning, who's a privacy researcher at Castlebridge, calling Calmera's privacy controls a sheer unmitigated disaster in a massive report about the company. The big concern, though, is that it's just the tip of the iceberg and that we're on the verge of a bunch of companies claiming that their AI-powered programs can promise the world. Though again, that's not to say that AI won't have its uses in healthcare. Right? A lot of prestigious and serious hospitals and institutions like UC Irvine are looking into how to leverage its power. And in that case, they're exploring how AI-powered conversational health agents can help sift through patients and more quickly get to the bottom of what a patient's concerns and needs are. And if done properly, it could heavily expand how many patients hospitals can see and how well patients can be treated. And it's clear where the world is headed as companies like NVIDIA, whose hardware and AI powers much of the tech, are now looking into shifting their focus to medicine, which also isn't surprising considering it is a $23 billion market and just growing. But the big difference is that they're generally not using this to diagnose patients like Calmera is, and they're not rushing to put it out there. And really, anything using this tech, especially in diagnosis, would likely need a lot of peer reviewing before its use was considered safe and ethical. And all of this kind of boils down to that classic thing of new tech. It can be amazing, except for all the cases where it's not. And often, the times when it's not, it's because things are rushed and people are looking for a quick buck. But we'll have to wait to see how all this plays out.
And then, before we get into the final segment here, I just gotta say congrats to Riley M, the first Daily Dip winner of the weekly $500 giveaway towards any tickets on SeatGeek. Because as a newsletter subscriber, Riley wins $1,000 instead of just $500. Because again, SeatGeek and the Daily Dip are still giving away up to $1,000 in tickets, and you should definitely enter today if you haven't already. Just add code PDS to your SeatGeek app profile for a chance at the weekly $500 prize, no purchase necessary. And $1,000 prizes are available to Daily Dip subscribers who add code PDS newsletter, doubling entries and winnings. So get in on that, you're welcome. And also, that brings us to the final segment, comment commentary, where we dive into the comments on the last show, see what y'all were saying, what you were sounding off on. Which, on the note of sounding off, there were a lot of comments about Jesse Waters.
If you're making $20 an hour to work at a fast food restaurant, right? Is that six figures? Are you making
$40,000?
With a lot of people like a Mr. Star saying, Jesse Waters making $5 million a year, yet laughably struggling to do first grade level math, really makes me believe you can truly do anything you want in this world. You had Scorpion saying, people like him grew up to rich parents in private schools and the jobs were lined up for them. You can do anything doesn't work for everyone, especially if you're out of luck and your parents are poor. Which I will say two things. One, while I can't speak to Waters, I will say, you will always in this life come across a lot of pull yourself up by the bootstraps saying, but nepo baby living motherfuckers in your life. And connections and who you know play big factors in no matter what your life is. But also too, and this is not universal, I'm speaking more kind of like generally, I am someone that believes that almost anyone can do almost anything. But I will say it is for a very cynical reason. You know, being in this very fortunate position that I found myself in over the past 15, 20 years, I've come across and I've gotten to speak with a lot of very, very successful and very wealthy people. And while, yeah, you have examples of people that came from nothing and or like they're just so fucking smart or so fucking driven, there's also just a lot of people that have no idea what they're doing. Trust me when I tell you, do not waste your time worrying about imposter syndrome. Blind confidence, or the presentation of confidence, trumps almost everything. In so many facets of life, actually being qualified for the thing, usually not a requirement, scarily enough. And I say that as someone that I wish I had that. But yeah, I'll just leave that one there. And then the final thing I'll mention, just because it got fixed, Tony Ruiz said, I'm surprised your episodes aren't on Spotify in audio format. Great work, though. And I also got a number of tweets over the weekend going like, Phil, did you remove your stuff off of Spotify? No, we didn't remove it. It should now be back up. Without boring you with all the details, we're in the midst of changing a number of things behind the scenes, with that including how and where we upload the show, that being YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as creating a hub over at philidi.tv. It's where we're going to start posting show notes, include a link page for like all our sponsors, having a hub where people can find all our content, as well as offering other stuff that I will mention next week. Don't worry about it for now. Just know that I see your comments and requests and stuff like that, and we're working on things. But that is where I'm going to end today's show. As always, thank you for being a part of these daily dives into the news. Also, friendly reminder, grab some of that new gear over at beautifulbastard.com while you can. Some shirts and hoodies going to be vaulted somewhat soon. But main thing, just remember, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow. You on my mind a lot. Don't need no time watch. I don't know how I got you in my pocket spot. Yeah, that's bae. Need you every day. You light my oxygen.